It is Locked On Jazz for the 6th of September. The summer interview series continues, but with a different twist. The story of Eric Woodyard, Deseret News Jazz beat writer. Some NBA news and notes and culture code. That's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing great. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky little numbers on the Utah Jazz. You can get this podcast every day on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Some of you are having problems on Google Podcasts. There are two different feeds. There's one with my old picture, Locked On Old, and then there's a second one that is a picture of that is the Jazz, the Locked On Jazz logo with the Locked On Podcast Network, and that is the one. So if you swap that now, again, if you're having problems with the feed, I don't know how you're hearing the show today, but that's okay. You can also tell your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On Jazz. We have a Locked On Jazz Facebook group. I want to welcome Mikey Peterson into the group. Caden Smith, welcome aboard. Gary Johnson from Australia, glad to have you. Eugene McClintock from Texas, works for the U.S. Army. Thank you very much for your service. Derek Cohen, glad to have you aboard. Mike Thompson as well from Draper, Utah. Luke Sampson, who currently goes to Wasatch High School, glad to have the youngsters staying with us. Rexburg, Idaho's Kaysten Sorensen. Wayne King, glad to have you aboard. David Sorensen out of Ephraim, Utah, and others as well. But wanted to just grab those and thank him, Brett Schnick, as well. So a lot of fun things going on there, a lot of posts that are worthwhile, good conversations taking place on the Locked On Jazz Facebook group. So thank you very much for your involvement. All right, bunch of news notes, but then what we're going to do today is this is the last show of the week. We're going to do a summer interview series with Eric Woodyard of the Deseret News. Eric came last year mid-season, or early season, but mid-season, just got dropped in the middle of the pool, kind of an unbelievable task, and did an incredibly good job as the Deseret News writer. He's also got a pretty good backstory coming out of Flint, Michigan. And so we're going to talk about that. I thought it just was an interesting perspective of a guy following a dream. I find him inspirational. And so that is today's episode. Then next week on shows 1 and 2, we will do the summer interview series. And then I think – I'm saying this out loud because I'm trying to make myself do it. I'm thinking that for Thursday's show of next week, we will either go live with it or just – I will do have my pack ratings done for the season. Tony Jones tweeted last night that the Jazz OTAs have started. So the way it works is that guys kind of all start after Labor Day, all around the NBA, start to congregate. There's a big article in The Athletic about what's going on with the Celtics. Guys start to congregate around, and because there aren't any pickup games anymore. So now they're going to get their game with their teammates and play an open gym and get to know each other a little bit better and play in that setting. It's not coached and it's not mandatory. And so, but, you know, they have a great facility here. And so the trainers and those guys are around if necessary. You're in your own comfort zone. You've got your food, you got your practice facility, you got your locker. And this now is the best place to get your game. You know, we've seen Donovan go and play Dwayne Wade Classic, and we've seen guys go play in L.A. for Dante and games in L.A. and all those items. Now the best game is actually at your team location. And so the guys all seem to congregate around at that point. A few interesting news notes. There's a bunch of incredible coverage going on with the Hall of Fame week going on. I thought Ray Allen's quote about LeBron James was interesting. He asked his two favorite teammates to play with. One was Sam Cassell. Said he was always positive. He knew he was going to fight. Had positive body language. And the other was LeBron. You had fun with him. You competed with him. And he was always one of the guys, was the quote. That's maybe in a lot of ways, the signature differential between LeBron and some of these other stars is that I don't think you were saying that about Kobe, and you weren't saying that about Michael. And so in turn, a lot of guys want to play with LeBron who haven't, you know, and some of these other stars have had a hard time having players, Kobe particularly, having players come play with him and or stay and enjoy it. It's probably the uniqueness of Pau Gasol's career is going to go down, that he was just understanding enough to know how to play with Kobe where so many other guys were not. Tyrone Wallace, a former Jazz last pick of a draft, played with a Jazz dealer, then kind of burst on the scene with the Clippers last year, got an offer sheet from the Pelicans, and then the Clippers just matched it. The Clippers now have too many guys on the roster, so they'll have to deal with that coming in. But it's just a great story about a guy who's just worked. I liked Tyrone Wallace a lot when the Jazz drafted him. He had been both the man and a complimentary piece at Cal. He couldn't shoot it at all, but he was awfully long. A little bit similar to the Melton kid who got traded the other day to Houston. But has figured out how to shoot well enough. Great slasher, great kid. Really, I got to know him a little bit, so I'm a fan. I thought that was a cool story that he got that offer. I've been mentioning this book throughout, called Culture Code, and I thought I just finished it up, and then I reread it, went back through all my highlights. I felt like I was seriously doing a book report. I think that what jumps out to me in this book. Is some of the character, the idea of the book is that Daniel Coyle goes to 8 elite level corporations, including the San Antonio Spurs, Navy SEALs, and some others, and then finds out what in those organizations creates a culture that allows them to have success. I thought there was 2 that were really interesting out of the chute. One was that you build safety in your environment and have shared vulnerability. I'm going to be curious to talk to the players if they feel that. And then how do you build safety in a group? One of the things he talks about is that your leader shows vulnerability. So very contrary to kind of what we think of as that leader who never says anything's wrong, but instead that leader that kind of shows vulnerability. He talks a lot about over-communicating expectations. That's something certainly Quinn over-communicates in a positive way. He talks about you deliver the negative stuff in person, tells a great story about how Joe Madden, Cubs co-manager, has a bowl with in his office, and in there pieces of paper, and every piece of paper has a bottle of wine. I don't quite understand if Madden has all these wines. And you pull it when you have a transgression, you come in to meet with him, and then you pull out the piece of paper, whatever that bottle of wine is, they either you have to go get that wine and bring it back or to have your discussion, or you open up the bottle of wine and then have your discussion at that time. And it's kind of a way to have deliver the bad news in person, but he also does it in a manner that brings everyone together. The word they often talk about is family, but what they feel like family derives from is that moment of vulnerability. So I thought that was really interesting. He then went through, and I thought this was noticeable for the Jazz last year, a list of characteristics that allow for this type of culture to build. So close proximity, eye contact, physical touch, short, energetic exchanges, everyone talks to everyone, few interruptions, lots of questions, active listening, laughter, and thank yous. You know, you watched the Jazz play last year, and there was a high level of communication on the floor, higher than any other team. The physical touch thing, the amount of pictures I have in my file with them, one arm around the other, or things of that nature, Quinn talking to some of them, I think is very true. And Quinn certainly fosters lots of questions amongst the group. And then the final one is obviously that you build that vulnerability that then builds that safety. It was interesting. They said, he writes in the book, some doctor wrote, we have a place in our brain that always worries about what people think of us, especially higher ups. As far as Our brain is concerned. If our social system rejects us, we could die. Given that our sense of danger is so natural and automatic, organizations have to do some pretty special things to overcome that natural trigger. And it's interesting. You think of these guys as so overpowering and brilliant, you wouldn't feel as though they have that. So that's just a few notes from the book Culture Code. It's great, by Daniel Coyle. If you're interested, please go grab it. Eric Woodyard is coming up. His career story, more than jazz talk, and then we have some great, great jazz talk coming up. Are you a small business owner? If you're a small business owner, then there is a company you need to know about because it can save you a bunch of money. It's called MazumaUSA.com or Mazuma USA. Here's how it works. Mazuma does all of your taxes and bookkeeping needs for you for an introductory rate of $75 a month. That's right. Your entire finance department, taxes, bookkeeping, all the things you don't want to do are $75 a month. So easy. One step. You send all of your statements and documents to Mazuma and you're done. You hook up with them and they then click in. Every month they prepare the paperwork for you, and then at the end they have the taxes for you. They also go beyond that. They're talking with you about the best way to go about your taxes. You have a CPA that is designed to your company. You also have a bookkeeper. They're the same people. You're not swapping from one to the other. It's a local company based right here in Utah, and they have canceled at any time, no hidden fees, one flat rate. So if you're a small business owner, say 1 to 5 employees, call Mazuma at 801-988-5354. That's 801-988-5354. Summer interview series continuing. Deseret News jazz beat writer Eric Woodyard joins us. Now, Eric joined the Jazz last year in almost cruel and unusual fashion. He came from Flint, Michigan, and got dropped in the middle of a beat in 5-6 games into the season. Eric, I mean, I know your dream probably as a writer was to cover a pro team. That is not how you expected it to happen, I'm certain.
No, it wasn't, man. But, you know, I was just so thankful for the opportunity, man. And like I said, I joined, I think, my first game, man, they played the Lakers. I literally flew in. I missed about 3 flights, flew in and came to the game at halftime. Got to cover that game. And obviously being from Flint, you know, Kyle Kuzma, we're both from Flint, so. You know, it was cool to cover that. And that was the game where Donovan had that nasty putback. So, I mean, it was just a great opportunity to start that game. So it was so great.
Back me up a little bit. If you don't, tell us, for those who didn't get to know you during the year last year when you're covering the team for the Deseret News, maybe didn't notice the byline changed. Give us a little background. You grew up in Flint, Michigan. And what's the run? What was your passion as a kid? What's your run up to this point? You're still a youngster, but what's your
Yeah, man. I'm, your run? I'm 29. I'll be 30 October 16th. So, man, growing up in Flint, you know, we're a basketball town. I mean, you know, so many pros, you know, we would get spoiled a little bit going to the pro-am games and watching Mateen Cleese and Morris Peterson. And you know, I was really inspired, you know, by the 2000 Michigan State team, you know, with the Flintstones that won a national title. Morris Peterson, Mateen, Charlie Bell, those guys, you know, were the anchors of that 2000 national championship team at Michigan State. So I always wanted to make it to the NBA, man. Then you get to a point in your life where, you know, you have to, you know, be serious with yourself. I was a good basketball player, but not a great basketball player. You know, not good enough to, you know, play on a Division I level. So when I went to college at Western Michigan University, I literally asked, what can I do to mix basketball and writing? And they told me journalism, and the rest is kind of history, man. So I just kind of took it from there. I really studied the field and where I'm at now.
It's funny you say that. I don't talk to kids very often. People aren't that interested in hearing from me, probably rightfully so. But when I do, I always tell them that the game is just readdressing your dream. Like, there's nothing wrong with changing your dream. Like, always dream, have a dream, but just readdress it all the time, right? Like, when I was 5, I wanted to be a fireman. When I was 8, I wanted to be an astronaut. And when I was 11, I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, right? And so then I just always talk about how, well, what I wanted to do is I wanted to go to the ballpark every day. And then I realized as I got older, well, I'm not good enough. And so now the ballpark turned into an arena, and that seems to be even more fun. And I'm doing – it's a little bit different, but I'm going to the ballpark every day.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think it's a skill within itself to know what you're good at. Just like on the basketball court. I mean, everybody can't be Michael Jordan, or everybody can't be, you know, Karl Malone, or, you know, you have to understand that sometimes you might have to be, you know, a Craig Hodges, or you might have to be a Jeff Hornacek. You know, I mean, that's the skill within itself, is understanding what you're good at. So for me, you know, I had to understand I'm good at basketball. I can still play recreationally, but I'm not good enough to, you know, play Division I or play in the NBA. And I still like to have fun. I actually play a lot of pickup basketball here in Salt Lake with Tony Jones, you know, and some of the guys in the area. But, yeah, man, it was a skill within it. I had to really reevaluate myself. And coming from, you know, urban area like Flint, you know, my parents wouldn't have been able to pay for me to go to school had I not earned an academic scholarship. So that was big for me, being a first-generation college student, to really try to find a way, any way I could, and writing took me out of my neighborhood.
So you're the first of your generation to go to college?
Yeah, definitely, man. My parents graduated high school, but none of them had ever attended college. And I graduated from Western Michigan University December of 2010. And I'm a proud Bronco, man. I love Michigan State as far as athletics, man. But I'm a Western Michigan Bronco to the core, man. That's my school, so well, I always plug that.
Congratulations to you. Congratulations to your parents. That's an incredible accomplishment to raise your kid to be able to, you know, be the first one. I think that so tip of the hat to them. Flint,
thank
Michigan
you,
has been in the news a lot. So we all know about the water and the bad politics and the corruption. What is it really like?
Man, it was tough. I mean, but it gives you a tough mindset. I think, you know, and you see that in a lot of people that come out of Flint. You know, it's a lot of celebrities and athletes and entertainers that have made it out of Flint. And I think you see the common core. It's like, it gives you a strong mind. I mean, like growing up there, man, we're not given maybe all the resources that other towns are giving as far as like state of the art equipment and things of that nature. But I think we have learned to adapt. You know, it's no different with this water crisis. Even when it was going on, you know, my family were in the thick of it, but you know, like we just learned to adapt and find ways to get through it. And I think that's what makes a Flintstone. We call each other Flintstones there because we're tough, man. So growing up there, man, I couldn't have asked for a better upbringing, because I was able to see, you know, good, and I was able to see the bad, and I was able to form character out of seeing both.
All right, so we got a lot of stereotypes going on here, Eric. We got an African-American first-generation male out of a tough inner-city urban setting. And the Utah Jazz, white, mountain, African-American population's like 1% in the state of Utah. Like, I mean, we got everything, right? Like,
right, right.
Did you apply for the job? Did they find you when you just answer that, because that dictates my next question. How did that happen?
Yeah. I heard about it. I'm a member of the National Association of Black Journalists. And
group.
We have a email thread that we sent out with different jobs and stuff. And I have been itching to become an NBA beat writer, man. I mean, that was my goal, you know, always being an NBA beat writer. And I was getting turned down for jobs, man. I was still, and I used that as motivation, man, and just continue to work on my craft and get better. And I saw the Utah Jazz opportunity pop up. And I know a lot of people might look at like, why would you come to Salt Lake City? Because everybody did ask me that back home, like, what is in Salt Lake, you know? We know Stockton and Malone, but other than that, what is there? You know, we know mountains, but, you know, I decided to take a risk, man. I prayed about it and consulted with my family about it. And I thought it would be a great opportunity for me, man. And I took it. And it's funny because, you know, when I first got here, everybody's like, you know, what does Utah have? But by the end of the season, everybody was calling me trying to purchase jerseys and get tickets to games. And I'm like, man, y'all was just talking all this trash about the Jazz. Now y'all trying to be Jazz fans. So y'all got to make up y'all mind. So it's pretty funny, man. So, yeah, I came out here, man, just blind and just worked.
So
worked to exhaustion if I had to, man.
Where you did an unbelievable job. I mean, we'll talk about that in a minute. You really you did a great job. The backstory, though, is worth telling. Were you nervous to put in the application or just figured, you know what, I'll apply and then deal with it?
No, I wasn't nervous, man. Like I say, I would have went anywhere, and I would have went to Alaska or anywhere, man. If I really wanted an NBA job, a beat writing job that bad. And I always listen to this motivational speaker named Eric Thomas, who's a great mentor of mine. And he always say, when you want to be successful, you have to want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe. And I was kind of at that point, man. So I wasn't really nervous. I was just more so wanting the opportunity, man, to show and prove that I could do this job.
So There's a guy that my listeners have heard about a lot. He was my closest friend as a kid, and he has started a school in what at the time was really the inner city of East Palo Alto, was really a tough place. It's gentrified a bit now with the wealth of Palo Alto and Stanford, and it's seeped into there. But he's run this school in which for 20 straight years, every kid who's graduated from the school has gone to a four-year college, and every single one of them is the first kid in their family unless a sibling's already gone to the school to go to college. And the thing he talks to me about all the time, you don't have any idea the advantages your kids have just by being in your house. He says, like, my kids have all this stuff. We've given them a great education. They're going to amazing schools. They're going to, you know, elite liberal arts schools in the East Coast. They're going to great West Coast schools. He says, but they don't know how to interview. They don't have a they can't look at a poster on the wall, the person that they're interviewing with, and, oh, I played golf there, or I did this there. They don't have the small talk ability. They don't know how to network. What were the you've done this incredible thing, Eric, to break through and be the first person in your family to go to college. What were the challenges beyond that, that it's just not as simple as going to college?
I think it was, man, like, for me, kind of carrying the load. I mean, my mom never put that on me, but just me, myself, wanting to really break the mold of my family, man, and just really put our family on the map. You know, like, for me, like, it means something for me now to come back home and my family to be able to have doors open that weren't open for me just because of my name or something I did, or somebody might recognize a last name or something. So that was, for me, like, the biggest thing. Of I felt like I was going through this, and it was difficult at times because I couldn't ask my family questions about certain things. But, man, I'll tell you this, my family is, like, all pro in common sense. So my mom might not be able to tell you, you know, technical things, but as far as common sense things and just putting things into perspective, I think I had that. And then my grandfather is actually incarcerated. He's doing life in prison, man. When I say this guy is one of the smartest people you'll ever meet in the world, and I think, you know, his journey and what he went through and the mistakes he made, I mean, I learned a lot from others' mistakes. I was never the kid that looked at, hey, you're doing this, or looking at a local bum and looking down on them. I would always listen to what they said because obviously they made a mistake at some point and learned from that. So for me, you know, it wasn't really a challenge, you know, in that sense. I just kind of always, I don't know why, I always looked at the world from a positive angle, man. I try not to really worry about the bad things. I try to focus on the positive things. And I use that to this day, so I can't really say it was a challenge like that. I just kind of, I don't know, man. I just prayed about it, and, you know, I'm kind of just saw the positive in things.
He's Eric Woodyard. We'll talk about his first year on the beat and what Utah's been like next, and then as the interview series continues into next week, we will talk a bunch of basketball, but Eric's story is worth talking about, and we're doing that on Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's show, as we continue with Eric Woodyard, I find his story uplifting. I hope you do as well. It's brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. The Murdoch family has now surpassed 92 years of business in Utah, and they have done it by really just having incredible pride in who they are and what they do as a company. One of the things that they have is the Murdoch guarantee. And so when you're dealing with the Murdoch guarantee, anytime you're with Murdoch, you are guaranteed at the end that you're going to have, well, first of all, you have the Hyundai assurance with every new car in March. Then you have car washes for life, safety inspections for life, a five-day exchange policy, and the famous price match guarantee. The famous price match guarantee. That's kind of what's made the Murdoch signature 90 years in Utah. Then there's the Hyundai brand, which I have found to be eye-opening. I didn't know how strong and solid the Hyundai brand was at all. I have driven just about every line of cars they have. Look forward to driving more. We've bought the Santa Fe personally when it peaked out on all the safety tests. The Ioniq is super quick, and the hybrid drives beautifully. If you're doing hybrid, don't just automatically do a Prius. The Kona is their rival to the Subaru Crosstrek that everyone's driving. It's a little quicker. It's a little smaller. Actually, a little faster, better gas mileage, about the exact same size. When you do the comparison, go look at it. If you're shopping for a car, find find the Hyundai equivalent, and then see what you can get with your features and everything else, and I think you'll be really, really pleased. Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. If you're playing fantasy football, the Locked On Podcast Network now has two fantasy football shows. Fantasy Football 24-7, Locked On Fantasy Football 24-7 is your traditional daily fantasy show. Ethan Turner does all the injury updates, an expert on injuries, and breaks down the moves and the trends and things of that nature. Then Vinny Iyer's got the new Locked On Fantasy Football Experts, which is our old show, and he's talking to the biggest names in the fantasy world every single day and doing conversations with them. So it's the best single spot to get all of your fantasy news. So if you're playing fantasy football and you're like me, you've played forever and never won, maybe you should listen to these shows as well on the Locked On Podcast Network. And remember that yesterday, Wednesday, is Crossover Wednesday. So find the game you care about and hear the two hosts talk about that. All right, so we get to Utah. What was it like the first time you had to ask a pro player or coach a question?
Man, well, are you just saying period or just in Utah? Which one?
No, once you're on the NBA beat. It's real. You got to suddenly do it.
Okay.
What was it like?
Well, you know, by this time, like, I was working at MLive for 7 years, so, man, by the time I got here, man, I had already interviewed. I had a one-on-one with LeBron James. I had an interview with Magic Johnson. I had interviews with Mike Tyson. You know, but I would say my first scariest moment, like, not even in Utah. I'll get to Utah later, but the first scariest moment I ever had, and it's comical now, you know, I can laugh at it, but, like, the first time I ever walked in the NBA locker room was the day Allen Iverson got traded to the Pistons, like, his first home game. So they was playing the Boston Celtics, and I was there, like, this young guy, like, 19 or 20, man, and I was the first one there, like, super early. So Iverson just, like, sitting in the back talking on the phone, and I was so oblivious to things. I went up to him and shook his hand and just, like, sitting here in a fly-low seat for the Pistons, and he got to tell me to move, and I was just, like, so nervous. That was the first time I've ever been starstruck. So once I got through that, you know, Allen Iverson was, like, a guy who I always idolized, him and Kobe Bryant as kids. You know, so if I got to the point where I can talk to them and mingle with them, you know, I was, like, I'm not going to say seasoned pro, but, like, talking to people and stuff, I didn't really have an issue with that by the time I got here. So it wasn't really that hard. And then, like I said, my first game, they was playing the Lakers, so, you know, Kuz was here. You know, that was a great, great way for me to get settled in, because I covered him since he was in the 10th grade. So it wasn't really that challenging. I think just the day-to-day things, man, just challenging yourself every day to be better than you were yesterday, because you could write the greatest story in the world today and it don't matter tomorrow because it can be some viral news. So that was a challenge, man, just trying to come up with new story ideas and reinvent yourself daily.
You did some great, great stories. You went back to Rodney's town and talked to everyone there kind of when he was in the middle of his probably most distress. You went and back to Louisville and got their take on Donovan. What were you most proud of?
That was definitely two of my favorites. I like talking to Brian Russell a lot too. That was pretty cool, just because I'm not from here, obviously. So all I knew about Brian Russell was obviously just him being on the other end of the shot. But actually get a chance to talk to him, that was great. Talking to Karl Malone, but I think the biggest thing was just finishing the year strong, man, like finishing it, you know what I mean, and not, like, wearing down in the end. I think the Deseret News did a real good job of using me and allowing time to take breaks here and there, you know, because it's a long season. I don't think people understand that, man, the travel and all that. And, I mean, we're reporters, so we're not traveling you know, the first class stuff or, you know, the private jets, so we have to actually get on, you know, regular flights. So, you know, man, just getting up, I think you get a better understanding of even the NBA players. Because, I mean, some days you might just be tired, and I'm not even playing basketball every day. I'm just writing every day. So I just was most proud of finishing the season strong and having the Utah people give me respect, you know, because, like I said, at the time I came, I could have either could sink or just swim, you know, and I decided to swim. So just finishing the year.
You're still a rookie, clearly, because it took you a whole 14 minutes before you took a shot at me for the fact that I get to travel with the team and you don't. Tony Jones has not trained you well enough that that's supposed to be in the first 2 minutes of anything you say to me. So what's Utah like for you?
It's not bad, man. I'm still getting used to it. The biggest thing, the biggest difference from here at home is just you know, it's a lot more peaceful. It's very quiet, and it's good. Like, I had to get used to that at first, and, like, just having so much quietness, I mean, peacefulness, you know, like, back home is just, like, I didn't even understand how much noise, you know, I was used to. Like, I just went back in August, and, you know, it's just a lot of noise. It's a lot of movement. I mean, here it's, like, you know, it's a lot more peaceful. It's very clean, man. I even tried hiking. I mean, I just kind of stepped out of my comfort zone all the way around, you know, moving here. Like I say, Charles, I never would have imagined, man, I'd be hiking in the mountains of Utah, you know, or, you know, taking in the mountain scenery. I had never even really seen mountains till I got here. So I'm still getting used to it. I can't say I just mastered it yet, but I got my go-to spots that I like to go to and kind of stick to the things I like to do.
It's interesting. There's an old story about a University of Utah football recruit who was from inner city LA, and they took him up into the mountains into Mill Creek, and there was so much space and so much lack of noise and activity that he actually freaked out. Like, he actually just started running, and they had to like grab him. Like, he was like, he just was having, you know, some sort of, I don't know, attack of some sort, right? He just freaked.
Yeah.
Because right. He'd never, like, it's understandable. You never.
Right.
And so it is, you're right. There's a quietness. There's a mountain size. There's a space issue. Things are, you know, a lot of parts of it are very different.
Definitely.
Have you found a place to get your hair cut?
Yeah. I actually go to two different spots. I go to Brickyard Barbershop. A guy named Ramon is a real good barber in there. But lately I've been going to Arturo, man, and he actually cut Kyle Kuzma's hair here, and Kyle recommended him to me. And, man, he been doing a phenomenal job on my hair, man. He just cut my hair today, actually. And, great. It took me a while to find him, but I found him, and very pleased with the haircuts I've been getting, man. That was something I was nervous about when I moved here. So I feel good now.
All right. You had your little boy out here. Did you, what things did you do with him?
Man, I took him everywhere. He got a tour of Vivint. He got so much jazz stuff he took back, man. It was ridiculous. He got a lot of different toys, and we went to Dave and Buster's. He went hiking. He went to play basketball at, Sugar House Park. Man, every day he did something every single day. So it's a great experience for him too, because I'm opening doors for him. You know, it's a sacrifice being away right now, but you know, I think we see the bigger goal in mind, and it's just breaking down doors, you know, for him that I didn't have as a kid.
What's the most thing you're most excited for year two?
I think it's so much national attention on the Jazz. You know, last year they caught a lot of people by surprise. So this year is going to be exciting because, you know, we're going into a situation where people know who we are, you know, even our reporters and stuff. So, you know, not only do the players have to step their game up, you know, we have to step our game up on the media end. So I'm excited for that, man. Just trying to do better than I did last year. You know, I don't want to get settled in. And I'm never, you know, satisfied. I always feel like I can do more. You know, I can be better. So I think this year is just, I feel a lot more comfortable, you know, not comfortable in the sense of like I can relax, but comfortable like I know what's going on. Because last year I just jumped head first into it. I didn't have time to really prepare or nothing like that. So I feel so much better, man. Like I don't have as much nervous energy as I did last year.
So if you're hooping with Tony, and I think Andy plays a little pickup too, and you beat him on a story, you start talking trash during basketball?
No, man. Tony talked trash regardless. That's my guy. So, but no, man. We all good friends, man. We're competitors, I guess, in a sense, man. But you know, Tony welcomed me with open doors, man. Andy welcomed me with open doors when my son was just here. You know, he helped us around. Tony helped us around the same way. And, man, I look at them as great friends, man. I wouldn't be able to adapt, you know, to Utah without, you know, good people like that in my circle, you know. So I guess you could say we're competitors, but, you know, more so than anything, we understand each other, man. And we have a certain type of bond because we are in the media together.
He's Eric Woodyard. Hopefully you've enjoyed this story. We'll talk basketball with him in our upcoming summer interview series. But I thought the story of his life, how he got here, what his experience is, worthwhile. It's a little bit of a different one than some of the other guys. So now you know him a little bit better. You can read him in the Deseret News. He's doing great work. Did a fabulous job last year. Can't imagine what he's going to do this year. He'll be back with us next week talking basketball on the Locked On Podcast Network and Locked On Jazz.